Let me narrate from source IP. So you could do it from source IP. Of course, this is the problem everybody's running with other issues. Is that in situations like an AOL situation, you might kill one of their 12 mega proxies, right? Or, you know, whatever NipperNet has like 15 ways it gets out to the internet or something like that. So, I mean, you could rate limit by source IP. The way to do it is you need to make them do work to ask you. So you need to have them ask you for a session ID. You generate a session ID randomly. No, don't put it in the database. Just generate randomly in memory. Give it to that person. And then have them send it back with the login information. And then you can check against the table in memory, which is much faster than going to the database. As for the XML stuff, you have to put a protection in front that looks for the complexity and stops it before it gets to the web server. Either that's a firewall or it's your own thing. Oh, right, in size. Yes, I do recommend limiting size. If you never have anything larger than 50K, set it to 75 or something. Most people, almost nobody thinks about that, right? And by default, all this stuff accepts up to like 20 or 30 meg posts and stuff. And that's when it gets really nasty, right? It takes a minute to, you know, takes me 30 seconds or something to upload a 20 meg post over a 100 megabit connection, and then it takes a minute for it to parse it, right? So, XML firewalls are these, well, okay. So it's another venture capital term. So it's something that makes people venture capital. That's the basic definition. Generally, there are things that sell that look at XML. They're like application level firewalls. A lot of the XML firewalls aren't created for security purposes. They're created to do stuff like routing. So if I have multiple web interfaces, web services, I can just put one box in front of them. And it's kind of like a load balancer. And it says, oh, you want to talk to the mainframe. I will send that information to the mainframe. Oh, you want to talk to this database. I'll send the information to this database. But they now, because of security issues, they do things like they'll check for the complexity of the document before it comes through and not let it through. So kind of like, you know, Sanctum's App Shield in front of web apps, XML firewalls or SOAP firewalls or web service firewalls or whatever gets you the most money right now, whatever they're called, look at the request and filter it for things that might be dangerous. They'll also do things like look for SQL injection and XPath injection and stuff like that. I can't always recommend them. I mean, for most, this is one of the only things that you can't fix yourself. If you have a SQL injection bug, fix it. Don't spend $100,000 for a hardware firewall that's now in your critical path that if it turns out they didn't do the right thing with their TCP stack, somebody can DOS it anyway and take you down network-wise, right? Or it's something you have to pay to maintain. They're not some things that you can just, you know, drop in front of your app and expect them to work. So, anybody in here sell XML firewalls? Obviously, we're not a vendor. Okay. Excuse me? I think Taros might do this kind of stuff. Forum Systems, Sarvega. Somebody come up with a prefix and postfix for a startup company, and it's probably, there's like 20 or 30 companies that do it. Like I said, they're mostly do stuff like, I want to do encryption on my web service, I don't want to write into my app, so the box will do it automatically, stuff like that. So any questions on the DOS? Like I said, we're not releasing them, but it's pretty easy for people to recreate them. You just need to build really complex but legal XML. And it could be, you know, complex just means deep, right? If I have 5 root nodes that have 100,000 deep child nodes, right? It's not just the number of nodes, but it has to be the linkage between them for something like a DOM attack. That's a really, really powerful attack. It's pretty easy to recreate. Obviously, there's no reason for us. It would not be a very ethical thing to release that. So discovery methods. We talked about WSDLs. I don't think we'll look at it. I'll talk about this real fast. UDDI is another great discovery method. Like a WSDL, what I talked about, just defines one service, right? You ask for a service, how do I talk to you? How do you find that service in the first place? Well, there's this great thing called UDDI, which lists all the services that somebody's running, right? So, yes, sir. Yeah. No. No. They will not load. People learn their lesson off the DTD attacks. And they will not load off-site XSDs by default. Certainly, you can tell your XML parser that you want to, but you know, I haven't seen anybody do that. Sure. Any other questions? I'm sorry, on the DOS stuff. Okay. So UDDI is a way I can list all these web services, and you might think that nobody's deploying them, but I've seen a bunch of them, right? A lot of people are doing testing of web services right now, or they have 2 or 3 that their business partners use, and so they put a UDDI server, which is XML on top of HTTP. It's nothing very complex. There's a bunch of free Google for UDDI browser, and you can download free ones or use web applications that will do it free for you. that they put these IP addresses out and they tell their B2B partners, wow, you know, it's so hard to set up a VPN. So what we're going to do is we're going to give you our UDDI address and then you guys can figure out how to hook up to them. SSL is on, right? So use SSL. That's what we'll use instead of a VPN. And they expect people won't find these UDDI servers, right? Because if you do nmap-a, I think right now, it won't say this is a UDDI server, right? Because it's just a port 80 sitting out there at port 443. The great thing about UDDI is it tells you everything you need to know to attack a web service. And it tells you, if an enterprise is deploying it, everything they're deploying. Now, they don't have to list everything, but like I said, some of this stuff automatically lists. If you have a UDDI server, Visual Studio will automatically list it up for you, right? So how do I find UDDI servers? Well, IBM, Microsoft SAP, and Nippon Telegraph and Telephone have very kindly stepped in and given us a nice searchable web interface that tells you UDDI servers that people have registered. So you guys see this hierarchy here? The whole idea is that, you know, I should be able to do a web service with another company without ever talking to somebody at that company. So first I go to a UBR. I search, if I want to talk to SAP, I search for SAP. I see all the web services that they're listing. And I go to the UBR will tell me their UDDI server, if they have one. I talk to their UDDI server, and it has things like invoicing, right? Maybe I want to do, I've sold them some stuff, I want to invoice them. And so it says the invoicing web service, this is the contact information for that person, and it exists at this URL. And so I go to that URL, I add a question mark WSDL, and the invoicing service tells me, okay, these are the 9 things you can do with the invoicing service. And now I have the ability to do whatever I want to those different methods. So that's the tree, and that's how people envision it. Obviously, it makes things easy for businesses, but it also makes things easy for attackers. One of the really scary things is there's currently no real binding of somebody who's in the UBR really is that person, right? Like this next one, who here is going to trust this entry? Bank of China, right? There's no cryptographic protection saying this is the Bank of China, but here they are. They're listed in the UBR. And with a character set that I can't read in my browser because I don't have the Chinese character set, right? Now, people are working on these big PKIs by which you can authenticate web services, but people are fighting over the standards. Like, that, obviously, it's a lot of money. It's just a lot of money to be able to sign certificates for web apps. It's going to be a lot of money for web services because it's only corporations. It's very rarely individuals. And so there's no good way of verifying this right now. So we'll do a little walk through a UBR. Microsoft has the prettiest interface, so I think I'll use theirs. So fortunately, Microsoft puts up a big barrier to keeping attackers from using a UBR. You have to be registered. What kind of registration do you think you need? A passport. So, I mean, if that restricts to all attackers with a Hotmail account, then I think we're all okay. So I'm going to sign in first so you guys can't razz me with how short my passport password is. Are any of the passport guys in here? Passport's great, by the way. Are any of the passport guys here? Okay. There's some really smart guys, so. Okay, well, I'm going to talk about something while this is loading. What? Sorry? Give away the book. Excellent. Yeah, because this is going real slow. Somebody's DOSing Microsoft from DEF CON probably, so. Okay, competition. Okay, the first person who can raise their hand and give me the new canonical XPath gets the prize. Yes, sir. Next. The injection attack itself. The string. Yes, sir. It's not a semicolon. Okay, I'm going to close my eyes. Oh, no, I'm not going to close my eyes. I'm going to say now, and then everybody raise their hand, and whoever's fastest. Jesus, there's no way to do this. Now. Okay. I think this gentleman was up there. Bam! You were the winner, sir. What is your name, sir? Come on up. Get your prize. And he can't even see the slides. That is amazing. What's your name, sir? I've spotted the Fed. Mike, show them the shirt. Here you go, Mike. Congratulations. Okay, that was perfect timing, Mike. Good work, because now I am logged into the UDI server. Now, I'm not trying to beat up on Microsoft. I'm just using them because they have the prettiest interface, and you don't have to really register. You just use Passport. But as I said, those four companies all run UBR nodes, and they all sync up with each other, right? So this is the same data from all of them. So we can do things like we can register ourselves as users. We can publish ourselves. Like I said, when you publish yourself as Bank of America, nobody calls the Bank of America headquarters to make sure, right? A little information and stuff. Let's try the search field. What should we search for? Any? Chase. Okay. Like a car chase, you mean, right? Another cool thing is they've got all these, well, it's not cool, it's actually incredibly boring, but it might be useful, is that there's all these different ways you can categorize these web services that are all competing. Like the government has some, and then the Visual Studio has its own, all this kind of stuff. And eventually, when a lot of people are using it, you should be able to walk your way down this tree and find all the things that are important. Finance, that sounds like an important one, so... credit agencies other than banks. It's amazing how many levels they have. Okay, they say there's none. Okay. That doesn't mean that they've actually categorized everything. Search by name. I can't see. Anybody see where I search by name on this? Maybe it's our providers. You're right. So I could providers is like the English name of the company or enterprise or whoever it is. And I'm going to do something more general than Chase because I'm not sure they're in here. I'm just going to do bank and we'll see what happens. There's not a huge number of people because there's not a huge number of people deploying them publicly. One of the things that our WS WizMap, one of the tools that we're releasing, one of the functionalities we had to pull at the last minute. So, yeah, Bank of America lender. It's funny if you buy like a Learn Web Services book and it's got like an example how to do a UDDI registry, search for that thing. It's going to be like Acme Bank or something, and there'll be hundreds of listings of all the people who have downloaded and actually done it, which tells you something about the... So, Ms. Matma Sharma is the contact. Here's her email and phone address that I'm not going to click through, actually. But... you put contact information in case you can't get all this magic pixie dust doesn't work and you actually have to call somebody. This is saying that Bank of America has a lending service. And they use a local host. So somebody's just been playing around. So, but if port 18,000 is now something very interesting to put in your Nmap scan, right, when you look at the Bank of America. But if this was, if they're actually exposing this, then this would be an URL to something that's internet exposable. And then there'll be interface. There's different ways of defining how an interface works. Let's see what their interface model is. It's called, like I said, there's lots of acronyms. It's a TLender model. So at this place, if they're publicly doing it, you'd probably have something like an URL. I think Bank of America had WSDL URL. Or it'd be like four back. Ironically, not a Bank of Lithuania. Awesome. We'll have like an URL that goes to a WSDL that points you directly to. Oh, something I forgot to mention about WSDLs that were in the slides. A WSDL gives you everything you need to know to attach to a service. So that includes the location of it, right? So a WSDL text document, if it's just floating around, contains all the information like this is what you can do, this is how you log in, this is how you transfer money, and this is exactly where the URL is. So if you have a WSDL, you have everything you need to know to actually do the attack, right? Because the location of the service, what platform it's running on, all that kind of stuff is contained in there. God, this is so slow. So anyway, everybody can go play with this when they're on their fast connections, uddi.microsoft.com, or you search for UBR, and you can play with other people's if you have a preferred vendor. Oh, yeah, all kinds of stuff. So at this point, well, I guess I'll show you how the discovery works if I was actually going to do something nice. If I wanted to use a web service for legitimate purposes, there is a nice little program called WS Web Services Studio. It's distributed off of got.net.com, which is like the Microsoft community site for .NET developers. I think it's actually made by Microsoft but not supported, so they throw it on the cheap site so they don't have people calling the 800 number about it. It's a great little graphical interface. Like I said, you know, web services, unless somebody gives you the client or if it's something like an Ajax app, you don't have a nice GUI way of talking to it. So it's a good thing for a developer. Yes, sir. Okay, right. And Eclipse has a web service platform. I use XML Spy, which is really expensive, but there's all kinds of really cool stuff too. So Web Service Studio. I think I've already gone to the bank. Oh, it's not there. So this is the studio. Does things like I said, you put a WSDL in there. It can either be on the internet and you ask for it. It can be local, and then it'll figure out where it is from the local one. And I'm going to go back to the Bank of Lithuania to the interest rates details. Here we go. Here's the access point. ASM.ASMX, so what platform do you guys think that is? Windows, right? It's probably ASP.NET. Although web services are supposed to be universally worked with each other, there's lots of little details, and so it doesn't always work. In fact, one of our tools, there's some problems. I'll demonstrate. There's some problems with the Python implementation. One of the problems is, not a lot of people are doing web service to person to person. They generally control the software on both sides, so they use the same platform, so these bugs don't get caught, right? So it's good that this is a Windows one. So we'll just guess that they have WSDL generation on there. Oh, looks like he was able to get it. It's maybe. Let's see. God, this network is so slow. Is Kaminsky talking now and doing his weird network stuff? No? Last night, okay. Was that good? Excuse me, sir? Really? He ended up at the hospital, Dan Kaminsky. Jesus. Okay, we're taking a collection in the memory of Dan Kaminsky. Unlike Dan Kaminsky, I actually don't put in applause pauses in my presentation. Do you guys think I should do that? I go, and that's a WSDL. Ta-da! Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So, this was able to grab the WSDL, and it's generated, like I said, it has all the information it needs to know on the service. These are different methods. This is just as if I was writing an application and I call a function that's defining my function. Just think of it as that, although it goes across the internet, right? In the web app world, these could be either like parameters in a post, like transfer money or do this, or it could be the URLs themselves, like slash interest, slash get money, right? So if I click on one of these, it tells me what was defined in the header and the body for each one of these. This has nothing, so that means it doesn't take any input. This one takes one string in the body, get latest interest rate. And so if I wanted to put a value in there, I can put it in there and say invoke. This thing, this is meant for legitimate users, so it won't let you do things other than what they define. But like I said, people sometimes don't check very well, so it might be very possible a good way to do an attack on this would be to run Web Service Studio or Eclipse or XML Spy through WebScarab, watch the traffic that's legitimate, and then edit it byte by byte. Remember, it's UTF-8, so it's 2 bytes per character if it's internationalized. Interest rate, interest rates by day, interest rates by day type, yada, yada. So this one doesn't require anything to invoke it, so I'll invoke it, and I should get something back. Right now, it's going across the internet. It used the WSDL to generate a message that it thinks these people are going to understand, and it sends it to them as an HTTP post and waits for the response, and here's the response. It's an XML document. It automatically parses it for us. Like I said, this is not how you're supposed to use this, right? If I was another bank and I wanted to get the interest rate, I'd have some application that would do this automatically and then give it to a user. Or if I was Bank of Lithuania, I'd create a nice little pretty GUI to do this for people, right? So that's why this is all ugly. Like I said, this isn't meant for human consumption. But here it gives us all the data that came back. We can say request response, and we'll actually see so messages have the envelope, the body, the header. We talked about the header. The envelope's required. It has things like what version of SOAP am I using, what's the namespace, stuff like that. And then the response, which is just an HTTP response. The I love this. They tell us the exact service pack version of ASP.NET. And then a UTF-16 encoded XML document that gives all of the input that comes back. Just like if I called in a program, if I called give me an interest rate and it had three things it returns, this will return everything even if it doesn't have information in there. And we're good to go. So here's the WSDL. It's really ugly. You can see why people don't read them for something that's simple, right? It's all that WSDL. You have to define everything like four times. And you can see why that might be a place that people don't look. So I will do an attack and we'll use Web Server Studio for it. So to wrap up before we get to the demo, why do we have all these discovery methods? It's this thing called service-oriented discovery, more venture capital. It's amazing how much of the English language is based upon what can get you venture capital. Service-oriented architectures. The idea is that delayed binding of applications. If I'm Bank of America and I know most of the banks in the world use some kind of standard thing to, say, clear checks, then I can, not even knowing who those other banks are, go to a registry, cryptographically check that that person is who they are because it's signed by somebody I trust, find the web service to do the transfer, find how to talk to that web service and talk to it, and you can program your software to do all this, right? Lots of magic pixie dust. It's a little bit scary. But because this is so powerful and because you can automate stuff to do things without humans ever involved, it's going to be very popular to people. Other than the UBRs, there's some cool third-party registries. Xmethods.net has a big list of like fun services. A lot of these are by people who are just having fun. Things like census data by zip code and stuff like that. It's a good place to play around if you just want to learn about web services. And then there's this thing called Disco/WS Inspection. Disco is a lightweight doing a UDDI. Instead of running a whole server to tell you what my services are, I just have a text file you can read it in, an XML file. This was a Microsoft-specific thing. It's becoming now WS Inspection, which is going to be a real standard to do this without running a whole another server to do it. Our tool will automatically look for disco files for you. Like I said, a disco file will automatically be deployed for you if you hit the compile button on Visual Studio. And so those are some of the new issues. The traditional attacks that we've always had still exist, right? Design flaws, the bad idea methods like we talked about, the same OWASP top 10 things, SQL injection still exists, right? Although some of these things are using XML on the back end, a lot of them are still using SQL. And so just as we had in web apps, SQL injection will work. I'm not going to talk about SQL injection. You can go find Dave Litchfield for that. The thing I will tell you is that the best way to do it is to, you have to escape those characters generally. You can use something like a C data block, put the entire SQL string in it that will magically get transferred by the XML document into whatever the string is and then put into the query. Overflow is an unmanaged code, right? Managed code is the Microsoft term for things like Java and .NET that run in a virtual machine. Unmanaged code being something like I compile C++ for an x86 or a Spark, right? Well, there's a lot of people have a lot of stuff written in C and C++ out there they still use. It still does the core of their stuff that they want to expose. And so all the vendors have cool ways of taking something that's compiled on my machine and making it web service accessible. One great one is called .NET Remoting. And again, I'm not beating up on Microsoft because they're bad. It's just theirs is the coolest and the easiest to use, right? If you have a COM object that works, and, you know, it could be something, I think it has to support IUnknown, and it's like the same standards, has to be remotable, like an ActiveX control. If you have a COM object, you can just click through, you don't have to write any code, Visual Studio, and say, I like this COM object, I want these methods to be exposed to the world. Boop! Magic pixie dust. And all of a sudden, now there's a web service with all of these, takes all these inputs and gives it to a C++ program. Do you think that it goes and finds out what the limit on that stir end copy is, or what the static buffer that goes to that stir copy is in that C++. Do you think it does that? No, it doesn't, right? It just gives it the information, just as a COM object can be called locally. And so it makes it really easy for people to take something that's local and remote it. So .NET remoting, it's fun. See it in theaters near you in 2007, right? When people start really deploying it, it's a cheap way to do web services if you already have stuff written on the Windows platform. Java, you can do the same thing with like RMI and local calls and stuff. It's not as easy, though. It's not just click, click, click. Mistakes in authorization and authentication. Because SOAP is stateless, people have to roll their own, right? It's very possible that there are methods out there that you find from the WSDL that don't require you, that don't properly check your access control before they do something. They take a parameter like, I want to transfer money from this bank account to this bank account. They don't check whose bank accounts those are. Like I said before, the auto-discovery mechanisms make this great. Because you no longer have to go look for this stuff that's kind of crusty in a web application. You just ask the WSDL, and like they're sometimes named really stupid things, like make me admin, right? Cross-site scripting. Now, like I said, this is not something, SOAP isn't something that you eat with your web browser, right? So if I get cross-site scripting coming back in XML, it's not going to run a script. But, and this is the big but, there's a lot of situations in which there's a web interface also to these applications. And so cross-site scripting is also still doable, it's just you're not attacking the web service itself. The exception to this being AJAX, right? The downside is it's not easy. I mean, I guess it's an upside because we're all good people in this room. The downside for the bad guys is it's not easy because I have to write something that, you know, in AJAX, like in Google Maps, it takes some XML data and then it makes it presentable. So I have to figure out probably exactly how that's happening to write cross-site scripting script that'll actually run when it's transferred. That being said, unless they're doing filtering on their side before the information gets to me, it might be possible for me to do input through an AJAX interface one place and pop it out somewhere else. Another thing we've seen is a lot of these web services, there's a human in the loop somewhere, right? If I go transfer money at a bank and I have to put a memo field in there about what my transfer is about, I put that field in, I make sure the transfer is going to die, I call up the customer service rep. Hello, how can we help you? We're, you know, dumbassbank.com. What can we do for you? Well, you know, my transfer's not working out. Can you pull my file out up and see what it is? Oh, sure, give us your social. They pull it up. It's a web interface. Boom. They're owned. Obviously, that's a pretty sophisticated attack. It requires some possible inside knowledge, but maybe not. And if this is, you know, if you have an IE 0 day, or the way people patch IE and IE, you know, 90 day or something, and most enterprises, right, people are still running IE 5 and stuff, then you might get root control of their box. So any questions on those attacks before we kind of move into the wrap up and then the demo? I'm sorry that I know it's a lot of talking in a row. Yes, sir. Sorry. Right. Did everybody hear that? That Apache Access allows you to take pre-written Java and just drop it in. Yes. Access is great too. Apache Access, if you guys want to play with web services and you don't like Microsoft, Apache, the Apache project has their own web service framework, works with Java. It's very nice. We're playing with that too. I know, I'm beating up on Microsoft here because of the demos written in Microsoft, but this is stuff that everybody does. So, thank you, sir. That's a good point. So we have a couple of tech tools that I'll show you. One's really cool. The one that Scott wrote, the one I wrote is kind of crappy. But I'll pretend that I wrote the one that Scott wrote. The cool one is Whizbane, is how you pronounce it. It is a SOAP fuzzer. It doesn't fuzz the SOAP implementation, it fuzzes the application behind it. It takes a WSDL, right? And, you know, you can go and buy like SPI Dynamics and Sanctum and all these like attack tools to attack web apps. The really hard part that those guys have to tackle in writing those is actually the discovery of the attack surface, right? For us, the discovery of the attack surface is easy because we ask it. And unless they're really smart and they're manually editing the WSDL will most likely represent the actual attack surface. If it's not automatically generated to the WSDL, it's probably not callable remotely. And so it takes a WSDL. Creates a nice little proxy, looks up what the type of the types are, like this is a string, this is an integer, and it does nasty things depending on that type. It's all extensible. It supports SOAP responses and faults, gives you a nice little interface, I'll demo it, and well, not a nice little interface, it gives you output and a web page. The future work we're looking at, right now it only works with the RPC style SOAP for all the really hardcore SOAP people in here. It doesn't do doclit because of a bug in Python's implementation of SOAPy, but we're working on it. We're going to resubmit a patch to them and get it fixed. So once we get the libraries fixed, it should support almost all web services. Oh, here's Jesse Burns, my partner, who has also helped Scott in writing this and who is always tragically late, but not on consulting projects. He's never late on consulting projects for all those people with... Wait, I'll do a Dan Kaminsky. Jesse, ta-da! Thank you. Thank you very much. And then the other tool that Jesse helped with, that's pretty cool. It's okay. Takes a WebScarab logs as input. We use WebScarab a lot now. It's a really good product. It's a web attack proxy, as probably much of you know. It's open source. OS does it. There's this guy named Rogan in South America, right?
I'm not sure where.
I don't know where he is. South Africa, I'm sorry. Not South America. S-A-Z-A, right? Who works on it, and Jesse submitted patches and stuff. Jesse likes to run it in Eclipse in debug mode, like in real time. He's pretty hardcore about that. But anyway, it's really cool, and we use it a lot, and WizMap is not really for finding web services that are out there. WizMap is useful for situations in which I have something that already talks over a web service. So maybe let me think of something. So back in the B2B, when I was talking about places web services are being used, there's a point on the slide about OFX, which is the standard. Anybody here use Quicken or Money? Okay, you're not going to raise your hands, but there are people in here who use Quicken to Money, the manager money. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying that OFX is the standard by which it talks to banks when you say update my accounts and it gets your American Express information. That's called OFX. The next version of OFX is based on SOAP, right? So say I have a client like that. I have something that's been shipped to me and uses a web service on the back end and I want to reverse engineer it. So I'll put WebScarab, I'll set my HTTP proxy, put WebScarab on it and watch that traffic because it goes up from Quicken up to Chase and MBNA and American Express and stuff, right? Those don't go through Quicken. Intuit just tells Quicken where to find those people, and then they go find it, right? And that's all over SOAP. And so say I want to actually, research that communication channel, then I'll record it in WebScarab logs, and I'll run WizMap, and WizMap will go through and find all of the things I called as well as the implied directories and try a bunch of web service discovery request looking for WSDLs and disco files and stuff, and then write them out to the disk. So I don't have to manually go through and find the things that are actually web services or not, and it'll find all the implied web services, and maybe they don't want their disco files out there, they just don't know that when they hit compile, it automatically goes out there, stuff like that. Future work, something we had to pull at the last minute because it wasn't working. We're trying to get to find UDDI servers when you get a SIPR range or maybe even a map XML file, right? Because they are web server, they're, you're going to have to do kind of a NICTO kind of thing where you get a UDDI, where you look at a web server and you ask it, for different URLs that mean that it's a UDDI server. That's going to be very powerful because, like I said, there are enterprises out there that have these exposed. Just don't tell people about it. Don't register them in UBRs. Just tell their partners about it. And then hopefully one day we'll integrate it with WizBane so you can run it against, the people that you have a legal ability to pen test against, and then you can restrict it based on regex to only be within their domain, and it will go find the web services and then automatically attack them. You run it overnight. And then, your two-week engagement's done in an hour and a half, so. Okay, tying it all together, I think we kind of talked about this. I can go to a UBR, I can attach a UDI server, ask for the services. I go ask, dumbbank.com, give me all your web services. I ask that service, give me your WSDL. It gives me the WSDL. I look at the dangerous methods. I run WizBane to try all of those. I find an XML injection. I use XML injection to change the user ID, and I become whoever I want. So a question here is, are the old bugs still relevant? And a lot of people here would argue that OWASP Top 10 was never relevant, or that OWASP Top 10 is actually saying the OWASP Top 4 in 10 different ways. But it turns out that it is, right? These are still bugs that exist in our world. You still have to validate input. Access control is still a problem. Authentication session management is a problem. Like I said, SOAP doesn't give that to you. You have to think about it yourself. Cross-site scripting, less of a problem, but a problem if there's ever a web interface, and certainly a problem in AJAX applications. Injection flaws and buffer overflows. Buffer overflows, things like .NET remoting make that kind of stuff a reality because people might get lazy and not rewrite their stuff. Injection flaws, SQL injection, XPath injection. This is worse now because we've added all these new protocols that are spoke on the back end, so we have new things to try. Fortunately, almost all of those things use a single quote, so it makes fuzzing really easy for them. Insecure storage, denial of service, insecure configuration management. I think we proved that denial of service is still a pretty big issue. So the conclusion before we get to the demo, web services are very powerful. They're easy to use. They're fun to use. It's fun to go out and get a book and write 20 lines of code and have it do something like get me census data and then plot it onto a map. That's really, really cool. But because of all that, they're really, really dangerous, right? Especially because of the ease of use on the developer side. There's a lot of security work that needs to be required. These people are writing these WIS security standards, but I don't think a lot of security people are looking at them. And so those things need to be inspected. We need better attack tools from everybody to help develop. We GPL'd our web service stuff, so we're looking for people to help us with that stuff. I guess we'll start a SourceForge project or something, so you can do that. We need people to define the best practices for development. Nobody knows how to write secure web services. That's one of the problems here. You can go and buy 20 books now on writing a secure web app, but you can't buy one on writing a secure web service. You buy all the books that say securing web services, it's all about the encryption and stuff like that. That's not a bad thing. That's something people care about, but it has nothing to do with injection attacks and stuff like that. And then we need for people to settle up and stop getting greedy and build this PKI infrastructure before people start deploying and moving my credit reports over these systems. And then on our shameless plug slide, we are hiring. If you are a researcher or consultant, please send your resume to careers@isaacpartners.com. And a shout-out to all these people. I mean, sorry, I'm a professional. It's not a shout-out. It's a thank you. My brothers wanted me to know how many people here know Leroy Jenkins. Okay. But it's a pretty good number. Okay, any questions before we get into the demonstration? Yes, sir. That's an excellent point, and I'm sorry I glossed over that. It was in the slide, but I didn't say it. Yes, the right thing to do is if your web service you're putting out on the internet and you don't want anybody in the world to talk to it, you just want like a partner, just to email them the WSDL. Yes, turn off the auto mechanisms to publish the WSDLs and just email them. That's the best protection against that kind of stuff. Makes it much harder. If you don't have the WSDL, there aren't built-in stuff in SOAP just to ask for all the methods, right? That's the method that's supported. And people do that. If you go drop Google Maps into WebScarab and find out what web service they're talking to and ask it for a WSDL, it's not going to give you one. So there's certainly people that understand that. That's also something, because if you don't want people using your service, the way you get people to use your service is to mail them a WSDL. Or you don't want people like scraping it like eBay and stuff, so that, you know, they make money off of your work, then that's something you can do too. Google API is probably one of the coolest web service interfaces out there. See Johnny Alon's talk. Any other questions before we move on to me messing up the demonstration and you people laughing? Okay. I'm really sorry that there's so much talking in a row. We gotta get better at putting lots of demos in there. I'm sorry. So here we have I don't know if I can do this in 800 by 600. Here we go. A virtual PC of Windows 2003. It's got a web service on it. The exact same web service is currently running on wsdemo.isaacpartners.com if you're online right now and you want to play with it. Or if you go home and you want to try some of these tools, you're welcome to do attacks. I'm letting you do attacks against wsdemo.isaacpartners.com. So it's going to be the only site that's going to say that. So like we talked about before, there's this cool thing called WS Studio. I'll run it here. I'm going to point it at the web service. It's very, very simple. Oh, I don't want to go out to the internet. I'll do it locally. Oh, that's just fine. It's got one user or one method. Log on user, right? So this is simulating maybe we're bank, and the first thing you do is log in before you get your account balance and stuff. And it takes a string username and a string of password. Okay. So say I've been hired to pen test this. What am I going to do first? And let's pretend this is like one of those more complicated ones. There's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of methods here. I want to see if there are any vulnerabilities. And so I'm going to do that through... using whizbang to do the initial attack. So do whizbang.py. It should tell me, yeah. So we're big on documentation and GUIs because we're privately funded and we have no venture capital. If you want GUIs, go to Foundstone. They excel at that kind of stuff. So whizbang, you give it an URL. This isn't descriptive enough. You have to give it an URL that gives it a WSDL. It can also point to a local file. So I am going to give it the URL of the WSDL I grabbed. Was bag things. This is why our partner Himanshu, who spoke at Black Hat, he video records all his demos, which is, I'm starting to really appreciate how smart that is. That's not a real demo if it's videotaped? Right, okay. Right, because I spend an hour and a half convincing you I'm smart, and then I can't type, so... Excuse me, sir? Oh, yes. Thank you. Is that a little more readable? Okay, great. So, running it with an URL that should give me a WSDL. Okay, I run it. It pulls down the WSDL. I know that happened real fast. It runs a bunch of tests. It does this by looking up in a XML file it has, which I'll show you in a second, the type, you know, in a SOAP, you define types. You can do simple types, which are things like string and number. You can define complex types, which means you define a type can actually, it can actually be an XML document itself and stuff like that if you want to do real cool extensible stuff or binaries. We don't support those yet, just simple types. That covers probably 90% of web services. So it looks up what the type is, like a string, and it looks up in the XML file the things we want to try. And it tries those things, and these are all the things that get tried on that one method. And it, then it reads the response, and this response coming back in the SOAP message is made pretty. And here we have something that says SOAP fault. So I click here, and it gives me the what actually ran. So outbound, here's my HTTP headers. I set the SOAP action header. Kind of glossed over this, but there may be, we have seen vulnerabilities in being able to set the SOAP action header to different than actually what the method is in the SOAP message. Something to check for. And then within the body, we say log on user. The namespace is this namespace. This is the encoding, yada yada. And then these are supposed to be, they're not indented, but they're children to this. The username and the password strings. And what was our username here? Anybody see it? It's a single quote. All right. And the password was default. And so the response was to find this XML document. Oh, I threw an exception. Okay. This is a fault because it's a SOAP fault. Gives me the nice little system trace of all the things that got called. Now, this is like 50 lines of C sharp that's running on the other side. Look at all of the methods that get called in a row to parse that. Look at this. That's all, that's, every one of those is a function that we went through to call this. So that's, there's a lot of pixie dust there, right? And then it gives me log on user. Let's see. Where was the? Actually, we'll do this the pretty way, which is if I got this, I would do it myself then in this. So I'll try it. I say my password, my username to quote, single quote, and doing it. Exception. This isn't a local exception. It just passes through a SOAP fault as an exception on your side, and I go to request response. Oh, great. Yeah, that's not what it's supposed to say. Yeah. Thank you. You're right. I need to have something in password so it doesn't... Ah, thank you. So I get a SOAP fault back. Server's unable to process a request. And what does that look like to you? XPath. So what was it, sir, that I'm going to try next? The winner of FRAC? That's correct. Let's give a round of applause for that. Ta-da! Thank you, sir. Single quote, or one equals one, or... single quote, that's not a double quote, equals single quote. Spaces are significant, yes, sir. Oh, I assume the pauses in his human communication between words were meant to represent the symbol also known as a space when encoded in UTF-8. So we'll let him keep the frack. And string results successfully logged in on user ID 3, Henry Ackerman. So that was an XPath injection. Why was it this user? What's special about this user, do you think? He was the last guy, right? So when they referenced the list, they probably asked for the last thing in the list, right? Which you do with a negative one in Python. So they asked for index never negative one, and you can either ask for the first thing or the last thing. Generally, I should get the same thing, right? And they asked for the last thing in the list. Maybe they went to this talk and they thought it was enough. They weren't paying attention to this part, just the last hour and a half. And they thought it was enough just to ask, you know, to not ask for the first one because that first person might be a user. So I'm logged in and this is good, but nobody wants to stop here, right? This is where you stop if you're like a real second tier hacker, right? Oh yes. I'm throwing it out there. That's right. I said it. So what do I want to do? Right, I could do user ID equals one, but although I do know how the XML file is laid out, that's kind of cheating. What's another way to do it? Well, so let's go back to our string. Let's say it is pretty close. It's not exactly the string, right? We did see what the string was, but just because we know what the injection string was doesn't mean we know exactly what's in the XML document, right? Unless it references it right in that path, the XPath string. And so this bottom one, what else could I do other than ask for user ID equals one? It's actually simpler than that. Name equals admin. Yes. Right. I can just do name equals or quote, 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 and get rid of the or one equals one because I want them to match the first one, right? So I don't make it a full tautology anymore. I make it a tautology only if the name is equal to who I want it to be. Does everybody understand that? So I am going to, let's say I've tried admin. It didn't work. And I know these people wish they were programming on Unix, right? So they used the word root. And I'm now successfully logged in as user ID 0, name root. Ta-da! Sorry. If it works for Dan Kaminsky, he comes back every year to Black Hat in DEF CON. So if it works for him, it's going to work for me, right? So does everybody understand what we did here? This was an XPath injection, XPath 1. This could work with either an XML flat file in the back end or a quote-unquote XML database. This exact same query string would work in an XQuery, right? Because, like I showed before, XQuery, I mean, the simplest way to do it is all you have to do is define the document you're looking up, which is the same as a table, right? No questions on that? Yes, sir. Of course, yeah. How would I use that to map out the tables in the database or the XML file? That is harder. It's we're not there yet. You're right. Emmett Klein worked on that, and the way he found to get it out was only through logging or logging off. He was not able to get error messages out that contained enough information, right? Like the traditional way of SQL is that there's a SQL statements that you can do. Yes, sir.
Sorry. We're going to do a spot the Fed right after they're done. I'm watching you, gentlemen and ladies who are Feds in the audience. If you get up and leave, I will burn your ass. Okay?
You're going to go Karl Rove style on them?
Want to be undercover or not, if you leave this room, I will burn your ass. Okay? So, don't do that.
Okay.
That's my natural threat.
I'm sorry. Could you? It's probably doable. We don't have that answer yet, and that's something that we'll be working on. Emmett Klein says, does it through that binary. I think now with XPath 2, there might be better ways of doing it. You might be able, because you can reference external links, it might be possible for me to reference something and then make the rest of the XML document look like it's part of the URL, right? So like people do cross-site scripting with an image tag to get a cookie out. When it hits my log, I might be able to get it out of a log. I'm not sure. Klein looked into doing it with error messages, and he wasn't able to do it. Still, the guy's disappeared off the face of the planet, so if anybody knows him, have him email me. I'd love to see what he was doing. But you're right. In SQL injection, there are the 19 commands you can probably do in a row that through the error messages you can map out the nodes. Okay, well, since we got a second, I'm just going to do a quick demo of WizMap. Since I learned, set it up without you guys seeing it. Okay, so this is WizMap. Python's compiling it. Okay. Shoot, that's going to be hard to see. So if you run it with -h, it says you can do all these things, ask for WSDLs, ask for discos, store them locally, verbose. I'm going to ask it to do everything. I'm running in a directory with a WebScarab conversation log. Although, if you have it in a subdirectory, that's fine too. Right? Yeah. It'll search all the directories for WebScarab logs. Anybody, who here uses WebScarab? A decent number. I recommend you guys use it. Anyway, as you can see, there's no -u anymore. We had to pull that out, which is one of the great tragedies of my life. Sorry. And I'll run wizmap.py-wsdls/discos, write out the files, and do it verbosely. And I just generate these logs by kind of cheating and going to things that I thought would have different types of web services, although I didn't know all of them, but I knew these were different web services I was going to. Like I said, this is not useful for blind. This is useful for reverse engineering something that uses web services. And if the network actually worked here at DEF CON, you would see that it would find multiple WSDLs and DISCOs here and then write them to the local disk. In the
which they were already written.
Which are already written. 1.disco, 1.wsdl, 2.disco. Wow. Okay. Right. Okay, so it did one test. While that's going, I'll show you one of those WSDLs. So this is one of the things that when I ran it in my hotel room, it pulled down. This is the WSDL for a census data. So do you think the programmer read that whole thing before it got published to the internet, looking for all the methods that he felt were, would be too dangerous to publish to everybody? Probably not. I'm not going to... That's for you to explore yourself, sir. So you can see it's doing some tests. It's looking for, it's asking for question mark WSDLs. It's asking for question mark DISCO. It's also looking for default DISCO URLs. And it's about to find one. And like I said, DISCO is like UDI. It doesn't define a web service. It defines the services you're publishing through a web server instead of running your UDI server. Okay, so open questions or comments. Is this useless? Do you guys think you'll never run into this? Any more questions from everybody? Okay, well, thank you very much. We'll do Spot the Fed.